welcome to the Cognitive Rampage Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Lowry, as usual. I am quite excited to have an old friend that I haven't talked to in a while, and the visual effects supervisor on The Walking Dead, many other television projects. One was on a team that actually won two Oscars just passed that we're going to talk about. But
Lance is also the author of It's All About Her, a book he talks about at the end of the podcast. I'll let him explain that.
I actually went to high school with Lance Ranzer, and he took a leap of faith and headed out to L.A. to follow some dreams. I want to find out what those have been, what they are. He's also a climber and a cliffhanger extraordinaire. Can't wait to hear about those exciting things, but he was kind enough to jump in with us for a little bit while he's on animation break. But Lance, man, welcome to the Cognitive Rampage Podcast, brother.
Hey, Adam. Thanks so much for having me, man.
Yeah, I was excited to talk to you, man. When I saw your post come up, man, I was like, look at this guy, man. Just came so far, man. And from little old Winter Garden / Ocoee, Windermere, whatever you want to call it, Florida. And just came on up, man.
Yeah, man. It was some good times we've had in college. And then can't believe this is where we're at, more than a decade later.
Oh, man, at least, man. But you look like you've been doing it, man. So take me to the leap of faith, man. I know we only got so much time and there's a lot to extract from you. We may end up doing a part two, but take me. We started to talk about your leap of faith when we were on the test call, but take me there, man. What was it? How'd it go down?
Oh, well, the leap of faith was just me realizing that, being in Orlando, Florida, going to school, being brought up there, it was a great time. But I always, as a kid, have had this knack for visual effects, miniature models for movies. And when I saw Star Wars back in the day, the originals, maybe before a lot of people's times, I just knew. I knew at that nine-year-old marker that this is what I wanted to do. And then, of course, college, I got my degrees in the BFA in computer animation and visual effects compositing. And as much as I thought Orlando would be the place for me for my career, all the job postings were in L.A. L.A. must be a living or resident. So coming from Florida to L.A. just to interview a job was just, it was too tough. So at that point, I made the leap of faith of, hey, I'm going to pack up my truck, drive across country. 3.5 days later, I landed in L.A., didn't know what I was doing. Had saved up about $10,000 in cash from serving and waitering in Winter Park. And just put my nose to the grind and told myself I will never go back to waitering. I'm gonna focus and go after my dream and not give up until I've depleted the money, which that was kind of a very fast thing, especially out here. I don't know if you know the rental market. $10,000 will get you a couple months. And I just didn't give up, man, and just persistence and got my opportunity. And at that point, I laid it all out there. Of course, wasn't that easy to get that opportunity. 6 months of just anxiety, stress, sleepless nights, and lying to the folks saying, hey, I'm doing great. You know, I've got interviews lined up. And and in reality, you know, I was back to the college days of ramen noodles and, drinking the Milwaukee's Beast. So because I still couldn't afford, and that $10,000, like I said, was going pretty fast. So that opportunity came, and I put everything out there. And, well, someone believed in me. And, well, fast forward 11 years later, making that dream a reality and living it, it's one of a kind of a dream come true. I kind of live in a reality that, is this really what I'm doing? Is this really happening? Or, you know, or does someone pinch me or push me a little bit so I can wake up? Of course, it's not all roses and fresh smelling flowers here. It's like any other business or job. There's politics and stuff that goes along with it. But you weigh out the good with the bad, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, you skipped the 11 years, man, and the landing in L.A. So can we back up a little bit? You land and you start grinding. How many interviews did it take before you got in? You know, what was the grind like?
The grind was, of course, you think whatever your senior thesis or your final product that you did in college was like the holy grail of I'm the cat's ass. You know, everyone's going to hire me. Who's first, you know? Well, that got shut down pretty fast when no one replied back to your when you send out your demo reels via mail. You send them emails, you go knock on their front door, and they're like, "Who are you? What? When? Yeah, we'll get to it if you mailed it." And well, days turn into weeks, weeks turn into months, months turn into, why is no one ever calling me back? What's wrong with my stuff? Then you start second guessing, anxiety kicks in. So I started going to every facility, whether it be Digital Domain, George Lucas's Industrial Light and Magic, Pixar, DreamWorks, tons of places, Hydraulics at the time, just all these visual effects places and houses that were interviewing for jobs that on the job posts. I knock on their door, talk to the recruiter, get the recruiter's email, get the recruiter's phone number, call them every couple of days. Did you get my demo reel? What do you think? Is there anything? This went on for a very large part of my first 6 months of moving out to LA. I was watching a lot of the visual effects movies to watch the credits to see who worked on these movies, whether it be like Transformers or the Titanic, and just start writing down all these companies that weren't putting up job posts. So I went from a pool of 8 job posts to a pool of, or facilities to a pool of over like 30. So I would drive out to them. And just keep knocking on that door, and no one budged. Everyone wanted experience. Everybody wanted, what did you work on? What was the last movie you worked on? I'm like, well, I just moved out here. I haven't worked on anything, but I'm fresh. I'm ready to work the hours and what it takes to prove myself. And they, everybody wanted experience. It was the catch 22. How do you get experience if you don't get the job? So, it was just this one time I was on the phone with the, doing my ritual every day call, following up with the recruiters. Of course, I had a block of about 30 of them from 30 different companies. They all knew me by name. They all knew when I was calling. And they all hated me. And then I finally hit this one guy, and I just wouldn't shut up. I was just spitting off, "Hi, I'm Lance. I just moved here. Been struggling, trying to find a job. I've got the best, you know, I've learned all the new skills. I'm ready to work." And he just kept on saying, excuse me, Lance, excuse me. And, I had them cutting me off. So I just said, "No, I'm going to finish this." And then he's just like, "Well, when you're done, I'll have a question for you." And I'm like, "Well, I'm pretty much done now. What's up?" And it's pretty funny. And he's just like, "Well, yeah," he's like, "Your spiel was awesome. Looks like you've done this a couple hundred times prior. But you called the sales department. You want recruiting." And then just out of my breath, and I don't know if I can curse on air or not, but I dropped the bomb word, and I said, "Oh, fuck." And underneath my breath, but the breath came out louder than it should have. And then I'm in this like deer in the headlights, like, "Oh my God, and there's no way that I can even fudge what I just said." And he just started laughing. I'm like, "Oh, thank God he's laughing." I'm laughing. And he's like, "Well, let's back this up." And he's just like, "You said you went to UCF." He's like, "That's funny. I went there 20 years ago before it was called UCF." And it was like I forgot what it was called before it was UCF. And I was like, "No kidding." I kind of just wasted my time with you. And he's just like, "Well, if you want to consider wasting your time talking to me, then sure. But I was going to tell you that my brother owns the company, and I would gladly pass your demo reel across. But since I'm wasting your time," and I'm like, no. So I just said the word F. I just told this guy, "You wasted my time," like the worst interview possible. And here's my opportunity. The door just closes in front of me. He tells me, "Send me the demo reel, attention it to him, and he'll get it to his brother." And well, yeah, I went with the little money I had left right to the post office, overnighted a demo reel at like 20-something dollars, which was huge for me at the time to spend on just mailing a demo reel. Well, I got a phone call within 4 days at a very low rate to start. And my first movie was Running Scared, which was Paul Walker. And it was just boom. There it was, little or no pay, but I was working on a feature, getting the feature credit, and with the next interview, "Hey, Lance, well, you know, I had another company when this job ended, the movie finished, it premiered, and I think it's 2006 it came out." And the next interview I had, they said, "What movies have you worked on?" And I'm like, "Oh, I just got off of Running Scared." They're like, "Oh, perfect. Yeah, no, I heard that one has some really great effects. And well, when can you start? Is tomorrow a good time?" And I'm like, it was just like that, you know, after what?
Yeah. Well,
it was to show proof that I have worked. I have what you call credit in the industry. And wow. that was a domino effect of a career that I could have never imagined to have worked on, from movies like Star Trek to Transformers to, you know, Beautiful Creatures, Avengers, the list goes on, you know, Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons, which took my first Academy Award for Best Visual Effects, to movies that, like today, I date back to Paul Walker because he was my first real celebrity that I got to work on in a movie. And finishing up Fast and Furious 7 last year was a pretty hard time for me, because I've worked on numerous Fast and Furious movies. The director loves the work I do, so he made sure that I was on a lot of the shows that he did. And to see Paul pass away and be able to work on those shots and give it my all to make Paul look amazing, even though he was passed away at that time, when you have the visual effects enhance his face, and even though it's his brothers playing his roles, it's pretty cool to be able to have started with him and end on a not a great note, but I did the best that we could to make his closing scene look as amazing as possible. So
well, you all did, man. I mean, you really did. What an honor, man, to be, you know, one of the people to work on one of the last films with such a good young actor. You know, that was so sad to see go so young. And I mean, he's the first film that you walk in on, and one of his last films to walk you out on, man. I mean, you're almost connected with the guy. I can see that.
Yeah, no, it's been a whirlwind of cool stuff, bad stuff, but in the end, it's cool to be able to whatever I touch and I make come to a reality on the screen. Millions and millions of people get to see it, but I'm not looking for that credit. The only credit is to put smiles, laughter, some tears when he drove into the sunset. And you know, spoiler alert, Fast and the Seven. That scene, you know, working on that was just kind of like my. It was just a real surreal moment for me, and I think that moment is probably one of my craziest memories of my effects industry.
Yeah, man, that sounds like something to last with you for a long time, man. And I mean, your story is, I'm over here trying to remain quiet, which is hard for me to do, as everyone that listens knows. And, you know, that drive, and people can't really imagine, you know, I think a lot of people have that fantasy, romantic, that notion of going to LA with your guitar, your talents, and somebody will pick you up. But after almost, you know, the grind like that, years, five, six, whatever years it was, you know, that you consistently stayed just pursuing the dream, relentless. And the way it goes down is like storybook. You essentially got the interview for saying the word fuck.
it's just one of those things that I'll never forget it. I mean, I can verbatimly remember that conversation on the phone as if it happened yesterday or an hour ago. And it's just something I'm kind of embarrassed about, and a lot of people don't know, but it was that moment. And I'm not preaching to the choir that you should drop the F-bomb at any interview you do. I think it came down to me just being depleted, exhausted, mentally, physically, and just realizing that a quote that came out that I've kind of manipulated myself, work hard, do good work, and never give up. It's got to pay off. And don't ever put a timetable on something. Don't put a month or a year. You've got to, what you put in is what you get out. And I strongly believe in that. And it's going to be an uphill battle. There's no doubt about it. Nothing comes on a silver or gold platter.
Yeah, man, you're preaching and I'm in, man. You got me sucked in. I'm like, yeah. I mean, and you unfolded, man. Like, so it was awesome. It was like you were owed all that, you know, and then all of a sudden you kept pushing and you break the wall, and then it's just waterfall of here's your dream.
It was, and it was so fast forward. It's crazy. Of course, I work mainly a features guy, but I'm now into a lot of TV shows. I wanted to move up. I wanted to get supervisor status. I wanted to run teams. I wanted to be more than just that one guy that's doing his part for the movie. I wanted to be bigger. And that also leads me to, yes, you have dreams and goals and expectations to conquer and go after, but it shouldn't end at that. It should, every time you make a dream a reality, you should always have another one on the backup, or a plan B is what I call it, or plan C. Just keep striving to be better. And if you never make it to the very, very top, that's okay. You've already made it in life, going from living paycheck to paycheck, which we've all lived in our time. I'm sure you have. I know as sure as I have. And to be able to live comfortably and not have to stress on, we can't go to dinner this weekend, hun. We're a little tight with money. I don't really have to necessarily do that anymore. And it's a great feeling to start checking off the stuff that kind of just destroys the American people, which is all those individual things, day-to-day activities that just destroy us, from anxiety to stressing, whether it be about food or rent or money or girlfriends or boyfriends. And you should keep striving to be better, be a better person, and take your career and see how far you can go with it, if that's in your cards. You know, me from the fraternity days, I was all about running Home Improvement and the party chairs. I wanted to be bigger. I wanted to manage everybody. I wanted everybody to have a great time. I wasn't just that one guy in the back corner being like, oh, let somebody else do that.
Yeah, you've always been that kind of standout, man. And I wanted to ask you, you talked about activities in your life and staying positive. And when did the climbing into your life, and how much did that play a role into getting you through those daily routines of calls and paycheck to paycheck?
That's a great question. The climbing came with a coworker of mine who I worked with. And I was just like, what is this girl? She's always fit. She's always showing pictures. And this was back in 2008, I believe, 2007, 2008. And I was like, what is this? And she was like, oh, I rock climb. And I'm like, well, what's that? I'm from Florida. There's rock? Yeah, we have little pebbles in our backyard. And she's like, no, I'm talking about like 1,000-foot, 2,000-foot and cliffs. And I'm like, what? How does one get into this? Then there's a gym that you train with trampoline floors and rubber holds that you go in. And I was like, oh, let me see what this is all about. And I was making some time to go in there, and I was taking classes to get better with it. And then I was very fortunate to meet an old Korean guy named Rion Park. Probably at the time he was in his mid-50s. And of course, there's all these younger kids climbing together in groups, but I went with him, and he took me with him with all his Korean family in groups. And they took me out camping and climbing to Joshua Tree, to Yosemite, to areas that what is this? I never knew or was on a map or on a radar. And they took me outside, and I was scared as shit. I was like, dude, I'm looking up at the wall. I'm like, wait, what? You guys are, this is the real thing. This is like no longer trampoline floors, no longer. So he just showed me everything. He was my mentor. He put me on the rope. He put the harness on me. He says, get up that wall. And I was just like, well, you're going to show me how? And he's just like, no, you're going to learn. This is how I learned. This is how you're going to learn. And of course, I was scared as hell of falling. So I made it a point to never fall, even though the gear will catch you and protect you. And as soon as I touched that rock, my hands, just the warmth of my hands and the cold of the rock just created a bond, almost like a glue. And when I touched it, I just felt like I was molding myself into this rock. And every arm length or every finger that grabbed or every toe that went on the wall, I connected more and more, and I wanted to go higher and higher. And when I got to the top, I clipped off, and then I looked, you know, you have safety gear and you clip into these monster hooks and anchors at the top, which support Google Gaga amounts of weight. And you then let go of the rock with your hands, and you look around and you look down, and you're like, holy shit, I'm 100 feet off the floor right now. Like, what? And then up there, you can see for endless miles of visibility, mountains and just beautiful, like just scenery. Something that you don't really get to see unless you're in an airplane or in a 100-foot or a 10-story plus building, a sky rise with no other buildings around. And at that point, not a single minute or a second went by from when I started that climb until I got to the top, whether it be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or 20 minutes it took me to get up to the top, that I think about work, stress, life, money, nothing. It was almost as if someone just pressed that big red pause button in my life and paused time, and I was able to just be stress-free, and something clicked. And at that point, I got better. I took more classes. I climbed outside a lot more. And I look back now, and I climbed Yosemite, which Half Dome, which is over 1,800 vertical feet of hanging off the cliff.
No, sir.
Yeah, no, it's something like, aren't you afraid of heights? Aren't you afraid of falling? What happens if things go wrong? You don't think about that stuff. You trust the gear and you trust yourself as an individual. Of course, you don't get on anything that you're not capable of doing. But I started to learn about trusting myself and just going out there and giving it my all, as if I did when I moved out to LA. That same thing, just give it your all. The reward is incredible. When we got to the top of Half Dome, Lindsay, my girlfriend, she and I did it. I got her into climbing big walls, and she can relate too. When you get to the top of this mountain, no one helped you up there. No one put a ladder or a crane or, said, put your foot here, put your hand there. No one did that for a good 17 hours from car to car. It took us, but we got to the top, and the view was just, money can't buy that. And I'm sorry. I don't care who you are. Money does not buy that moment. I mean, you want someone to take you on a helicopter and drop you off to the top. That'd be cool, but you didn't earn it.
Yeah.
And at that point I realized this is a hobby that was just nothing but a hobby, but it's my hobby that I can take away from reality of my day to day. And it just connected for me. And climbing since 2008. So that puts us at 8 years of climbing now. And I've climbed over 300 individual mountains. Limited. Some of the biggest stuff I've ever thought I'd never, you see in pictures or on TV or in movies. And I was like, oh, I was on the top of that. Or yeah, I did that. And it's not something to brag about, because some people, you can't brag to people with that, because people think you're crazy.
I would, shit. I'd be pointing, yeah, I climbed it. What's up? There's, you can show some humility, brother, but I won't for you. I mean, you climb mountains like that, and dude, you correlated it already. You see the personality of you come out. I mean, when you described your fight to where you are now in your career, you said, I want to get to the top. I don't want to be the guy in the back. And then here you are when you climb, boom, I got to be at the top. And it seems like that addiction to pursuing optimization and reaching that the highest potential that you could possibly reach, regardless of reaching, it seems that the search for the reach or the search for the climb seems to be as important, if not just reaching the top.
Yeah, I mean, once you start these things, it's like anything in life. When you start working on your car, let's just say you got to rebuild your engine. If you stop halfway and then you have to abort and get somebody to come in and do it, it's going to cost you a lot more money. Same thing on the wall. I could stop at any time and leave a lot of money and gear behind and get back down. Or do I push the faith and I go to the top? And the reward with that, you get the car back and running. You save yourself hundreds, if not thousands of dollars by you doing it. And it's a self-accomplishment. And when you're driving your car, you're not going to race that thing to death, because you're going to take care of that engine, because you spend a lot of sweat, tear, and blood into that. So the same thing for me. When I get to the top, I get that appreciation of, wow, I did this. This is not for anybody else. And I don't say everyone go out there and go rock climb, but definitely if I were to tell anybody advice on finding a hobby, whatever it is, let it be poker or climbing or swimming or just, writing, find a hobby that you have a passion in doing that can take you away from reality. Cause that hobby, believe it or not, is so crucial to your life. And most people don't realize that they work. And you've got to be able to pull away from that, work mode and enjoy life and not by going to the beaches and margaritas and doing shots and watching sunsets and sunrises. Granted, that's awesome. And that's something I do as well. But you got to find a hobby that you can do before work or after work to deviate that stress from the day.
Yeah, to pull away from it. And, how much I got to imagine working on such films and TV shows that, like you mentioned, have so much money going into them and so many eyes on them, that the detail of perfection and the pressure that comes with having to do that it seems as if your hobby rock climbing is training for work and your work is training for rock climbing, even though, you know, you're sitting still at a computer versus, you know, scaling, you know, 1200 feet.
Yeah, no, it's the amount of detail that we do with visual effects. It's as minute as removing a mole on a face to removing scars or freckles or bad makeup jobs or hair seam lines where they put wigs on actors. And on Sleepy Hollow, we do a lot of that's one of our shows. We do a lot of wig fixes. Of course, on The Walking Dead, same thing. Michonne, the samurai chick with the sword, she's, believe it or not, only has about an inch or two of hair on the top, and it's not that long. She wears wigs. so we're sometimes just fixing minute little details like that, and other things we're chopping heads off, arms, making blood squirt, and or putting Optimus Prime inside the scene of a shot walking around you in your house. So it could be as elaborate as that, as small detail as just a beauty work, is what we call a digital beauty work. And with Walking Dead, and, you know, going back to what I was talking about earlier, where I wanted to move up and get my career. I wanted to be bigger. I wanted to have more people underneath me. I went into paint roto supervising for many, many, many years on tons of shows and tons of movies. And now I've got my opportunity where I'm now the visual effects supervisor of The Walking Dead at my company, Pixelmundo, who I work for. Which means I've got everybody underneath me. I'm the last person that makes the call before the director looks at it. So at that point, I'm able to not only give direction and tell what needs to go where or what needs to do, but I'm also the person that sits behind the box and is like, okay, let me do this shot real quick and show you what I'm looking for, and let's roll that out across the board with the rest. So my coworkers get to see me actually sit behind the box working just as hard as they're working, not just standing around pointing fingers and crossing my arms and nodding my head. I'm a strong believer in just because you're the highest doesn't mean you need to just put your feet up and it's game over at that point. It's to be able for a TV show or a movie to air or to look as good as it do. It's a team effort. It's not just one person. And if your supervisors are getting in there and doing it and you've seen them bust their ass, I guarantee you as an artist, you're going to bust your ass just as hard to be like, wow, if they're doing it, I need to do it.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. And that's where I'm at with that, that part of
and
that.
And if you connected that, cause I can imagine climbing is down to every little detail, down to every, if I position a foot 2 inches to the left or a ball on my foot left, you could slip. I mean, it seems very detail oriented and focused. That's why I was correlating those two, the high pressure situation of dangling plus the pressure situation of a $300 million film. And before you got to show it in front of generally some of these out there directors that are going to be really, really, really meticulous.
Oh yeah. No, the correlation's phenomenal. And I've never put it both together and looked at it that way where, yeah, I'm looking at sometimes nail size finger holes to big jugs where I can put my whole arm around it. And there's other times where I'm looking and scanning the wall for foot placements, hand placements, but it's like chess. I'm not just doing what my left hand or where my next move is going to be. I'm looking at three or four moves ahead because I need to conserve as much energy as possible to move up this wall. And same thing with work. I'm having to look around, make sure departments aren't falling behind and moving ahead, be like, okay, I see that our 3D blood isn't looking as good. Let's go talk to the 2D team and say, can we do a 2D element? Can we buy something online or just do a shoot in the back on our green screen stage and get this moving ahead just in case the 3D element doesn't look as good as we want it to look. So same thing with climbing. I'm looking at moves ahead that can reserve the energy in my arms, my body, to be able to keep moving. I don't know if you put your hands above your head and try to put up a ceiling fan before or even drywall on the ceiling. After a while, your hands up here, that blood is rushing down and you're going to start losing that gripping power. It's just with genetics work and gravity. That's why I do relate the two now that you say that, and it's actually kind of cool. Good thing to kind of think about now when I'm on that wall.
Yeah, well, there's the therapist in me coming out, man.
Yeah.
seeing that, but I, because that pressure, man, of really sitting there and being that the last eyes on film, because you know there's people out that are just watching films looking for mistakes to point out.
I see that now. It's like a thing, and it's kind of funny because if they realized how much time goes into what we do, there are sometimes I'm working. We in the industry, it's a minimum of 50 to 60 hour work week. It's 10 to 12 hour days, and to put it into perspective for you, 4 seconds of footage of an effects heavy movie could take anywhere between 60 and 120 hours for 4 seconds of footage. And we're not talking about just one or two people sitting down. We're talking about a team of people. And you multiply that 60 hours times 5 people on a team, you're talking over, I don't even know what that math is.
Yeah, that's way much to fuck up. Yeah, too much to fuck up 4 seconds.
Yeah, so when people go and then they circle shit and they put it on YouTube or make these little montage sequences, you're kind of like, asshole. You have no idea. But I got paid for every one of those hours, so what's up?
Yeah, man, because they really do, man, and they find the thing to do it. But I didn't even know that. My God, I mean – now I start to put together why these films, I mean, you always know they're expensive, but when you're looking at film, when Transformers to me came out, I thought that was some of the coolest CGI I'd ever seen in my life or whatever was put together. And I'm an old Transformer fan. I grew up with the sound, you know, that was my thing.
Yeah. You know?
And when that movie hit and I was like, some people were really gawking like, it's not, it ain't bad. It sucks or whatever. But for me, I'm like, I'd never seen something like that where you see that many moving parts and pieces, you know, changing and going at once, man. So a 4 seconds on a film like that is.
Oh yeah. I mean, someone's got to sit there and move every one of those pieces frame by frame, you know, and there's 24 frames in 1 second. So of course there's the programs you can do like every 8 frames and the computer will understand what frame 1 to frame 8 would be. If you set a keyframe on one, it's like, you're on. If I put a keyframe here and I put a keyframe here, the computer's going to know the in-between is this. But then you also have to do motion blur. So the hand's never completely in focus. If not, it looks slow-mo. So if you do a motion blur, you add that to it, it'll create the realization these pieces moving. But someone still has to do that. Multiple people still have to work. And it's extraordinary the amount of work that goes into movies today or TV shows that gets unrecognized for the countless hours, the craftsmanship. You see all these actors on in the academies, and it's great that we have our own visual effects academy, which is awesome. But movies wouldn't be movies today without visual effects. There's no way you would be able to do Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter's. It would look so cheesy without, if they tried to do everything just practical on set.
Trying to do all that claymation kind of old school Clash of the Titans look.
Yep, but how long did that take? That took years. People aren't going to wait years for a movie. And, you know, with TV Land, I love it and I hate it. It's cool to see what we can put out in a short period of time. But that's the hate part is the short period of time. There's an episode of Walking Dead happening every Sunday right now. And we're putting in so much heavy effects every single week into each episode, but they think computers are getting quicker, and they're getting quicker. There's no doubt about it, but you still have to have a body on that computer to work on it. And fingers can only move as fast as they can move. Your arms can only move. You can only sit for so long. And the timetable is being crunched into a kind of an unrealistic expectation. With the company I work for now, we have 8 facilities around the world, each one of them around 100 artists. So we will send we can't finish in our 12-hour day to China at night in our Beijing office. And Beijing will take that work and work on it. When we're going to bed, they're waking up. And now that gives us a 24/7 capability of turnarounding more time in the day. And then we have the Toronto office, Stuttgart, Frankfurt. It goes on and on. And we're all managing these facilities to get this work out. Where one of our claim to fames is Game of Thrones. Pixelmundo does all the dragons for Game of Thrones. And it's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible the amount of work that they push out in our Germany offices and the amount of detail these dragons have. They're beyond photorealistic. They're beyond what should be in a TV show.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite scenes when the dragons show up, man, it's on. You know?
Oh yeah, I know. Everyone loves that. And it's one of the big claim to fame for the company, and it's been going great, as you can see. And now picking up Walking Dead this year, or last year, sorry. And that's another, it's one of the best TV shows out there right now. It's got, I mean, Universal just greenlit an entire theme ride based on The Walking Dead.
What? Which,
yeah, so we'll start seeing that at Universal.
My daughter's going to freak, man. She's got all the year passes. She's a Walking Dead fan. So now that they're bringing a ride there, she's going to, she'll be there every weekend now.
There you go, man. Some father and daughter time.
Nothing. Yeah, man. The 16-year-old, man.
Gosh. So yeah, we run a lot of shows here. We run Limitless, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Sleepy Hollow. We just got Fear the Walking Dead. So we will be the whole open season finale or season opener. Sorry. That's coming. We're working on a season finale right now. I'm currently, when I get off this meeting with you, I'm going to be grinding 60 hours to get the show out for the season finale that happens in a couple of weeks.
So you're already weeks ahead of the finale working on that one.
We have to. It just the amount of time, like I said, 60-hour work weeks for 4 seconds of footage, times that by an hour-long show. We've got to be a couple weeks ahead of time. Sometimes directors make changes. We don't want that person to die just yet, or we want this person to die this way and not that way. And then it's got to – we have to put all hands on board to fix that stuff and get that going.
And so they're getting that detailed as which way they want the arm to fly, how they want them to die.
The way the blood comes out, the way the blood flows to gunshots, to the way speck and sheen in the blood is twinkling and sparkling. Because granted, we can't shoot an actor. So we have to do that all on the computer and the way blood comes out. And it's all digitally. So there's no blood ever coming out of an actor or an arm being chopped off or a leg being chopped off. It's all done in the computer.
That's actually the question my daughter wanted me to ask you was how much is on-set makeup versus CGI on Walking Dead?
I would have to say most of it you see like the sets are actually built. They have a budget, which is pretty phenomenal. To be able to build these monster sets and set reconstructions. But back in Herschel, I don't know, episode or season 3 or 4, he gets his leg chopped off by Rick. And then the next season of 12 or 16 episodes, he's on crutches with his leg missing. Then, of course, you can have an actor cut his leg off for the role. Then it comes into our hands to digitally replace his leg and remove it. Through every single shot, every single kill with the swords, the guns, the knives, the stabbing. You can't have live action weapons like that on set. So usually you'll just see a knife handle with a small little tip of a blade coming out, and it's usually a green tape or a red tracking marker. Michonne's sword, same concept, it's only 2 inches long. The rest is digitally extended and slicing through or cutting or stabbing in the head. And then all the blood that comes out, I would say 80% of that stuff is done in the computer.
Wow, man. I couldn't, the fine detail of trying to keep a fake digital blade on top of an actual physical moving. I mean, what's something like that to take one head chop off? What kind of time does it take to put a tip of a sword on and follow through one whole head chop off?
Well, we have a sword. So first thing needs to do is to go to our match move. Match movers will match move the hand and the sword in the computer, frame by frame by frame, what it's doing in X, Y, and Z. They'll solve a camera. So as if the camera is on set, they're recording with the camera on set. They're going to replicate that camera, exact movements in a world as if they were there on set, but in the computer. Once they've locked that down, which could take about 8 to 10 hours just for that one scene, they sign off. We sign off on that. It looks great. Then it goes to the CG team, the computer generation team, to generate a sword, to build it. model a sword, what the sword should look like. Then once that's modeled, goes through a lighting department. The lighters light where the sun is on set, and if there's any lights here and there, and how it will cast shadow or light hits on it. Once they solve that, then that moves on to the shader and texture artist, who will texture the sword, put the silver sheen, whatever they're using for the blade on the samurai sword. Of course, blood when they cut it. So then after it's done textured, it then goes to an effects artist to make blood drip down the sword or spray away, because now they've got the movement of the sword where it's at. Once that's all done, it then all gets rendered out. Each one of those special, what am I looking for here, departments, and then it goes to a compositor who then will take the lighting, the shading, the effects of the blood, the sword, and the final scene, and stick it all together, and then color correct it, bring up the sheen, the shines, the shadows, and then animate that so it's twinkling and making it look as if it's real live action. And then it goes to the render farm, comes back, we watch it on the 60-foot screen in our, which is kind of like a theater, what it would look like if you were to see this in the movies. And I make my notes on that. Oh, add this, fix that. Once that looks fantastic and as real as possible, we then ship it to the clients, the director, and ask him for his final, what do you think? So all those departments tiled up would probably be maybe 4 to 5 days before we can actually see a final 4 second slicing of Michonne, slicing a guy's head off or cutting a body.
Oh my God. For all of you animation fans, Walking Dead fans, if you don't listen to this and watch these shows with a little bit more damn respect, 4 seconds of a slice through and you're talking 5 days of work before it's even approved.
Yeah. And that's what I think it should look like. And if the director wants more blood or less blood or this or that, then it has to go back to those individual departments to fix those notes. And so it's time soon. So a lot of people want to come out here and get their name on the credits and work on all these big, big features and TV shows and, you know, get all this money that supposedly comes with the industry. And I tell you what, once you hit that 70 or 80 hour work week or 100 hour work week, and you're thinking about that money, it gets old really fast. You better love what you do. You better have a passion for it, because it's frustrating notes, kickbacks, problems. And it's one of those things where it'll eat you alive month after month, year after year. And people have quit this industry, failed miserably because they were in it for the money and the credit to see their name go in the back for 3 seconds at the end of a movie, you know, like get all their family and friends. Oh, can't wait to see your name. And well, boom, it's gone like that. You blink and, you know, at the end, you do take your work home with you. It's any job is that way. But you got to be able to figure out how to dim that switch. There's no such thing as turn the switch on, turn the switch off. It's a dimmer. You always go home and you'll complain or bitch to your spouse or your loved one. And, oh, today sucked, this guy, this artist is a piece of shit, blah, 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 blah. And like everything went wrong. Everything was supposed to work. And then we had a freaking car hit the damn power line outside, cut off all the renders in the farm. Now it's going to push us into the weekend. This weekend we can't go out to wine vineyard tasting in Santa Barbara because I got to work all weekend now. F my life. But you know, the flip side is, oh, Sunday night. Oh, Walking Dead's on. Yay, next episode. And then I have to sit there and be like, oh my God, they killed that person. Even though I already know what happens, but not to ruin it for my friends or my girlfriend. It's like, you know, you got to kind of.
I was going to say, how many people are hitting you up 24 going, hey, man, what happens? What happens?
Oh, yeah. I when I got the promotion, I kind of did a little shout out on Facebook. And boy, I had everybody under the rocks come and hit me up about anything and everything, which was, yeah, you too, you included.
Yeah, man. I'm not shy. You're damn right.
But it's pretty. It's pretty cool to see my work and see the artist's work and be able to just, one thing I love about visual effects is we don't necessarily need to take over the show. We are just trying to help tell the story. And if it's a good story, visual effects will just fly by and they'll just help the story. And you won't be like, did you freaking see that effects? It'll be like, oh my God, so-and-so died. No way. It's like, didn't you see how they died? I spent 300 hours working on that death scene. So it, to me, it's just like, I don't want it to ever take over. And you see them pumping up movies constantly with effects. And they're just like, crap. The movies are just crap. Effects are cool as shit. But, and then it's like, oh, why don't you guys like fix the story? I'm like, well, we don't deal with story. We don't deal with sound. It's like with deaf people working on footage. So it really is like, so I wish we could, but I think the visual effects, they're counting on us too much now and in today's society to make the movie better, because we don't have good movies like we did back when we were growing up. Ghostbusters, the, you know, the original, like Indiana Jones, like Poltergeist, or any of those, like the original Star Wars. We don't have that today, those good, solid stories. Now it's just bombard, more dragons. Like just
selling
bigger.
Selling the effect. Just yeah. Selling the effect, pushing that, because that's really what you see, right? I mean, how many people went to go watch the movie Titanic not for the effects? I mean, you knew what happened at the end. You didn't want to see the story, but those effects made that movie. I mean, if you ask me, when I saw it, I mean, when he's dangling off the boat and shit, you're like, holy, whoa. And I liked what you said, man. The goal, really, that you animators are looking for is for somebody not to notice the animation. They're more noticing the story, that natural, hey, he died, rather going, do you see how shitty it was when he died? That didn't even look real. That you want them to just forget that it's animated and just react to the emotion of the story.
Correct. And that is what we strive, at least I strive for, to not go above and beyond on the visual effects, which means blow your mind. Yes, we're going to blow your mind with it, but I'm going to do it in a way where it doesn't take over the story. But when the story lacks its climaxes or its story, we come in and have to fix it, and we're kind of just blamed on, oh, that movie sucked. The visual effects were shitty because the movie sucked. Well, there's nothing we can do on that.
I can see that. I can see where people, because you can't point out, like, well, the plot line built slow, the character development was shitty, there was no real, it's easy to point out to go, well, the movie was terrible, but all I could really see were the effects, so I'm going to go right. I mean, you're on the front line, you're the first judged and the first to be missed and the last to be awarded.
You know, the movie like Sucker Punch, I love working on it. It was I think it was like a 2011 movie, five girls that just kick fucking ass. And we did the whole like World War One sequence with the Zeppelins and whatnots and the World War One too. And it was pretty cool and was awesome. But the story lacked so bad, and they kept changing worlds from futuristic world to the Asian world to the World War world. And it was just, I was like, what is going on here? And at the end, she dies of the epidermal, you know, right to the freaking eye or whatever they call that. It's sometimes I just have to be like, oh, you know, a couple other movies I may have worked on that kind of, you know, After Earth. And I'm not trying to like throw some movies under the Seeker, The Dark is Rising.
You can throw After Earth under the bus, bro. You don't have to say anything, but I will. I tried to watch that, and there's a good chance that's one of the worst movies ever made.
And it just, as me, it's kind of like, well, I was part of it. I was a big part of it.
I'm sorry. But the graphics is what made it good. I watched it. I'll tell you, this is why I watched it. I pulled it up because, frankly, I like that kind of cool shit, that Planet of the Apes, Alien, holy, you're in with the, you know, the Jungle Book type stuff. Like, I love that kind of cool fantasy world stuff. And the trailer sold me, because I was like, look at the fucking badass animal. How could they climb like that? They sold me on the trailer with those animations. So if it's any correlation to you, the only reason I even turned that thing on was because of the animation graphics that caught me, even though I knew it. But those damn things got me. I wanted to see that cool looking stuff, man. So if anything, I watched it because of that.
Yeah, and it's a hard thing, and sometimes now, you know, now that I've been doing this, 11 years, I'm very, you know what, I come in, I do the best job I can, and I leave. I go home, I go rock climbing. I was writing a book. I was taking trips and vacations. I'm a big...
Was?
What's that?
Was writing a book?
Yeah, yeah. I wrote a book back... took me about 5 years to write this book. It was about my dating life in Los Angeles and what
I saw. What's the name of it? Can they buy it? Put it out there, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's called It's All About Her, Bringing Back Chivalry for the 21st Century Man. I finished it. I self-published it through Amazon. You can get a Kindle copy of it or, you know, a Prime version of it within 2 days. Book looks like this here. I don't know if you can see that, but I designed the logos of his and hers symbol, like he's cradling her and holding her. Yeah. And I wanted to realize... I wanted to just get out there what I've been noticing, which is I'm a dying breed is what I've been told by a lot by girls and my time out here. And I'm like, what does that even mean? What am I a dying breed out there? Like chivalry. You get the door, you pay for the bill, you're gentlemanlike, you're, and I'm like, yeah, but every guy does that. And he's just like, you're not expecting to sleep with me on the first date. You didn't even try to kiss me. And I was just like, why would I? I'm trying to get to know you. I don't know. You know, that was all what college was about.
And that's not fake either. You were that way in high school too. You were not that way in high school at all. You were respectful. You built friendships. I mean, you stayed that way. That's no lie, man. You've always been that way.
Well, that's who I am as an individual. And I think today's society is changing. It's getting the wrong ideas. And these guys are trying to be more cockier and more like, oh, you need to sleep with me before, you know, I even consider you. And the, and girls are forgetting that they have the upper hand. They always have and always will. But they're now opening up that door and letting guys do and just walk in them and ruin them. So this book is more about what I did for how can I change, not change, but how can I get my word out? How can I get who I am as an individual out to other guys? And I looked at my demographic and I was like, well, the good looking guys, the Paul Walker lookalikes are... They're fine. They're gonna get their ass. They're gonna do whatever the hell they want. They're not gonna ever listen. It's the guys that weren't as good looking or didn't feel confidence in themselves or didn't have those older sisters or brothers to say, "Hey man, your white socks are showing on your jean pants. Like seriously, you need longer pants. Or why are you wearing black shoes with a brown belt? Is that a unibrow I see? You need to pluck that out and make it 2 eyebrows." So all this is in the book about how to become more chivalry, but first is appearance, your own, how to take care of yourself and be your kitchen and your bathroom at home, how to maintain the cleanness in that. Girls will appreciate that. I'm not saying your whole apartment needs to be that way, just those two main common areas. You keep pretty tidied up, your car. So I started like...
That's funny. I always said, you always want to know how clean somebody really is. Open up their microwave.
Yeah, well, don't open up mine.
See? No, I'm kidding.
No, we had a little potato blow up the other night.
See? No, but you're right, man. I noticed when my daughter was going through middle school and she would talk about her girlfriends and, you know, the drama stuff. And I was also coaching a high school at the time in football, and I was noticing there was this shift. There was this shift all of a sudden that these guys had the power, that the boys controlled it, and these girls were running around like trying to find a guy. And I was like, man, I remember in high school it was the guys that had no power trying to find their way in, right? A couple of assholes did, right? Mm-hmm. But outside of them, you know, there was, but I noticed that, and I said, what happened? You know, what's happening here? Why am I seeing like girls chasing guys like 100 miles an hour, right? I don't want to take away from the Beyoncés out there, you know, do your thing. But you know, there was this, it's almost as if marketing and music or something had worked convincing the girls that they really were just either to be picked from in some lineup almost.
Yeah. And I see it every day of my life when I go to, when I'm out to dinner with my girl or if I'm just out with friends, I'm looking over and I see, wow, kind of like eavesdropping. Are they on a first date? Are they a couple? Are they married? Is he being a gentleman or whatnot? So that just got my brain kind of rolling. Like, you know, I'm not the best at writing, by no means. I had a ghostwriter help me out, named Adam Choi, who helped me ghostwrite the book. He lived in my apartment building at the time, and we started, he's like, I love your idea. He's like, we need to get all these thoughts out of your head and onto paper. And I'm like, oh yeah, that ain't happening. And he's like, no, I can do that. And I was like, all right, well, so we would just grab the laptop and I would just just go out there and start yapping out. And he'd just write it all down. We did this like every Tuesday and Thursday for like 3 years. And then finally he's like, hey man, I just put together an outline of everything we've talked about and everything you've said. We've got like a 9, almost 10 chapter book here. And I'm like, what? I go, there's no way. And he's just like, yeah, we've got like 200 pages of material. And I was like, all right, well, what do you want to do? And he's just like, I think we need to start going to each chapter one by one and filling it up. And so that's what we did. And at that point, I ran out of things to say. We ran out of like polishing up the chapters. And at the time I was dating a girl, and it's in my book, one of the hardest things I had to do in my life, which was let go of somebody who I loved as much as I love. And he saw the season finale of The Bachelor last night. Comes with living with a girl, especially your girlfriend. He loved a girl, and he's never had to leave a girl that he loved. And it was so hard and detrimental to him. And I can relate to that, but she wasn't the right one for me. And I knew it. And in the book, I end the book on breakups, moving on, and final words of encouragement chapter, meaning just because you're this guy that was chivalry and taking care of people and nice and respectful, you have a clean place and a clean car and you're grooming yourself and take care and you have more self-esteem. You know, the ultimate million-dollar question is, how do you find the right girl? And that, I don't think anybody can write to you or write that. And if they did it, it's return that book immediately because it's full of shit.
I would agree. If somebody had the method, there wouldn't be so many books on it, right?
So many books, so many divorce rates, over 50% now. So with that being said, the book is just mainly on how to go on first date, second date, and third date, grooming and take care of yourself. Timing. I have a huge chapter on timing. Don't force an issue with somebody or force them to like you or you to force them to have that relationship. When you just graduated or she just graduated college, you're in your primo job, making your 6 digits or whatever, and you want her to move out to here with you. You want her to stop her life and run your life with you. You know, you can force that as much as you want, but at the end of the day, that timing, she needed to experience life a little bit more. Now that she's graduated and she's got her job, she needs to get her job and be in her job for a couple of years before she can even remotely tie herself down to you. So there's stuff about timing in there. There's stuff about, like I said, the breakup and moving on. I also talk about just a ton of stuff in there. And I think on Amazon, you can kind of like scroll through a quarter of the book and read some of it. They let you flip it, which is nice before you. So you can probably pick up some pretty tidbit information in there free. So there's that.
You're a man of many parts, bro. Like, I mean, I love what Wyatt Earp says in the movie Tombstone, a man of many parts. Yeah. And you are, brother. I mean, from a climber. And it seems like, I don't know, man. I this guy yesterday on the podcast, I loved him, Jason Crabtree, this researcher, conspiracy theorist guy who's awesome. And he talks about how the turtle and the rabbit is the turtle and the hare is not about a race. And the turtle winning is not to teach you anything, but life is about continually moving forward, and that you'll come to a destination and you're still not done. You have to continuously move forward, and that there are shortcuts in life, but those shortcuts many times just lead you to failure at the end. And I think that description, man, many times you may think you're the rabbit in the race, Lance, but I'm going to have to say, I think you're the turtle, man. You grinded, you steadily moved forward, and you've won, man. I mean, you pushed through some fucking shit, calling and phone calls, and then time and chance happened to you, or time and effort maybe happened to you. And then you blast it off and you've taken it to writing. You've taken it to movies. I mean, dude, you're living your cognitive rampage, Lance.
There you go. Yeah, no, and that goes back to what I said earlier in the interview, which is don't just have one goal, have multiple goals. Life is our brain is the holy grail of the universe. It's growing, it's learning, we use 7% of our brain. Push it, and you'll be surprised what you can do with it. You really can, whether it be writing a book, climbing a wall, or sitting behind the desk 60, 70 hours a work week working on 3 seconds of animation or footage. Patience, it's pretty cool. And I've just barely tapped into what I could do. And I'm taking that now to the next level with, I just bought a house, in Woodland Hills, and I'm taking everything I've learned in life. And of course the technology of the computer, YouTube and videos, I just built a huge waterfall into my pool with stones and mortar, and, which was pretty cool to do, and decks and roofing and whatnot. So I'm doing all these things on the house on top of my career and my life, my climbing, and, the book's out finally. And, of course, spending time with my girl and doing our trips. We're big advocates of world travelers, and so it's
living the dream, man. Living the dream,
stretching out my dream as far as I can, because we only live once, and I don't want to look back at regret. What if? I never want to say those two words ever in my life. I want to live, you know. And I've screwed up on my way. I've messed up on a lot of things, and. But you learn from that. I think that the more you mess up, the better you mold into a better human. I'm not saying go out and go kill somebody, because that's, you know, I messed up, I'm going to better myself. No, like, you got to pick and choose your battles and, what you mess up on. But, it's definitely, life is what you make of it. It really is. And these people that sit back and say, no, I can't do that. No way. You're fooling yourself. You're wasting your life away.
And I was going to ask you your life philosophy and what you'd tell somebody out there, or what you would tell yourself 20 years ago. You know, I still like to see that. If you could talk to yourself, you know, a day or two before you arrived in LA years ago, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, nice. I like that one. I would just say, hang in there. Everything somehow, some way, some form, at the end of the day, works itself out.
I love that, man. I love the connection to climbing too. Hang in there, man.
Yeah, that too.
You know what? While I'm on it, man, I got to write your quote on the cave wall, on this wall. Every guest that's ever been on virtually or in the Cognitive Cave leaves their one-liner quote that I got to write on the cave wall, man. So if you would, give me your line so I can write it up there for you.
It's going to be a line with a couple commas. How's that sound?
All right, man. I'm ready to write.
Work hard, comma, yep. Do good work, comma, and never give up, ..
Boom, .. And I'm signing it with Lance. Try to do it cool.
All right, man. Let me see if I can wave it over to the wall so you can see it, man. Oh, man. Get you up on there somewhere over there.
Right. Boom. Yeah, too far?
That's good enough, man. You'll take a screenshot and you'll have to post it on your...
Yeah, I'll post it up for you, man.
On one of your 1,000 social media sites.
On one of them, Lance, man. I'd love to do a part two with you, man. And, talk more about your philosophies, the drives, and what pushes you, and maybe even get detailed about, you know, more into your day if you're willing to do a part two. Some, I still want to publish this one and put this out. I think you dropped some knowledge people need to hear, you know?
Definitely. And more than happy to help out a brother as well. And it's been great. I've got a lot of knowledge, a lot of stuff that worked for me, may not work for everybody else, but at least I can put out what did work for me and how I went about it. And if people follow that and mold it and change it the way they need it to fit their lifestyle, I think that it's something that you can only better people. You can only better yourself, especially listening from people who are get to do what they want to do in life. And that's not an easy thing, especially in today's society with all the crap that goes on. But no, it's been a great, man. Don't forget about the book. It's All About Her. It's on Amazon, Bringing Back Chivalry. Just type in my name. If you want to hit up me, I'm on Facebook. Lance Ransler. You can find that anywhere. Just Google it. IMDb. You can see what the latest and greatest movies and TV shows I'm working on. Got the blog spots, the works. Just stay tuned. Every Sunday, we have a pretty crazy season finale happening on Walking Dead. I think everyone's going to really, really, they haven't already loved this season, which has been amazing. just the way it's gone already with RPG blowing on people to shooting the heck out of people, killing people with knives that are alive and in their sleep, to what you're about to see, which I can't say.
Nothing. Can't say nothing, can you?
Nothing, but stay tuned. And Adam, it's been awesome, buddy. And I'm so proud of you with what's going on with your life and everything. So
I have my moments, man. I've been lucky in some time and chances all, man. But, you know, I tell you what, I'm never going to watch an animated movie or TV series the same now that I know people, a group of amazing, hardworking people, giant masses of people, put together anywhere from 4 to 6 seconds of film over five to more days. And so shout out to all the unawarded yourself, unrecognized animators and designers and all the other titles that I don't know that are in the industry. Thanks for making the movies what they are.
I have to agree to that. Thank you to those guys too. All the visual effects artists that globally, not just here in America, but globally, that bust their asses day in and day out. So we can see those episodes every week and get to see the new Star Wars and stuff.
You know what would happen if this country all of a sudden animators went on strike too? Do you know what would happen?
People would have to read.
Well, that's what I'm saying, man. No, the point people would be so mad. They're like, wait, I don't have my Walking Dead this Sunday. I don't have my Sleepy Hollow this week. I don't have my Game of Thrones coming back. I mean, this fucking country, if not the world, would go into craziness if the animators are like, that's it, no dragons for you.
Yeah, it would definitely shut down a lot of people's livelihoods, that's for sure.
Some big guy in Hollywood's gonna have me murked now.
Yeah, you might want to shave the beard, go disguise somebody else.
You can help me with that though, right? You can send you some pictures and make me look prettier, right?
Yeah, slim it down a little bit, we can put it out, whatever you want.
Okay, all right. So when you say my photo shoot, everyone that comes out, know that Lance is going to make me look Paul Walker-ish, and he's going to fix it all, and maybe we'll get more people that way.
And get rid of the tattoo heart that he has on his chest from his goofy, drunken fraternity days of I love mom and a big heart with an arrow going through it.
Oh, man. We're going to touch base and do a part two, but I'm going to be out in L.A. in August anyway and then up in Kodiak, Alaska. But when I'm out there, man, I'll... then maybe I can hit you up, say what's up.
You got a place to stay, man, and bring you by the studio and show you the real magic.
Oh, dude, that'd be kind of you, man. But let's definitely set up a part two way before August, man, and get into this. Because frankly, man, I do this show because I like to learn as much as I can about a lot of things. And obviously, I can't go be a you or anybody else and do all the other things. So, you know, I'd love to sit down and really, when you were going into what it takes, you know, and explaining how it goes here and here, brother, I was wrapped in it. I would really love to learn, you know, like of the business, you know, the back end. How do you, you know, how does A go to G? You know what I mean? Because for me, that stuff fascinates me, the mechanisms behind everything and the processes. So I'd love to dive deeper into what that really is, you know, and takes.
Yeah, I'll definitely take you by the studio and you'll walk you by every department. We'll show you the whole process. And then from there, you can just, you know, go back and talk about it and show what really does go into this stuff that gets way overlooked and underappreciated. But at the end, we do get Academies and the Emmys and whatnot, which is pretty cool to say that you're part of that.
You got two Oscars, didn't you?
I do have two Oscars, yes. Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons and Hugo, Little Boy in the Train Station.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was on the team there and got tons of pictures with it. Got to play with the Oscar and have it at my desk for a while. And it's pretty cool to be part of the team. And like I said, it's not one person. That one person on stage, you know, that's not. He doesn't take the claim and the fame for all that. He's just, you got to put somebody on stage, and he's the visual effects soup, so he gets to go up there and be the face for everybody.
I appreciate you being the face for all those unknowns out there, the animators like we gave love to, man. And, you know, this show wouldn't be this show without the guests like you, man, that come on and share your lives and show the transparency and the struggles, you know, and not just the glitz and glamour of everything.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, but you have to worry about me realizing after this, I've got a 10-hour shift ahead of me, and it's already, 1 o'clock my time. But that's right. You know, you, this is what life's about. What you put in is what you get out. So I'm happy to have done this part one with you, and we'll definitely get that part two eventually. But now I got to go make millions of people happy by doing this shot, is what we call it.
Well, millions will be watching, man. And for all of the Tribe of Change, man, thank you again for coming on, man. And I look forward to part two. And definitely, I know everyone's looking forward to the finale. So as you're grinding through your hour work, I promise you that my wife and daughter are way excited for that release. And they're going to know. And everybody listening to this is going to know that Lance and his team around the world and everybody else involved and put a lot of effort into every 4 second and 8 second scene that we see, numb us out of our days and take us away from some of the bad times in our lives, man.
Exactly, man. Three more episodes left. Three more.
It's coming, man. All right, brother, man. But we love you at the Tribe of Change and Cognitive Rampage again. Thanks for doing this, man. And I say it to everybody. I love you, Lance. Thank you, man.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. AK to B, brother.
Ah, man. Take it easy, brother.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.